This is Medicaid Leadership Exchange, a podcast where Medicaid directors and other guests get frank about what it's like to steward the nation's largest health insurance program. Through Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance Program, 56 agencies administer a complex web of programs that provide access to essential health services. Listen in as we explore some of the challenges Medicaid leaders navigate and their top priorities to deliver services and build health.
Welcome to the Medicaid Leadership Exchange podcast. I'm Kate McAvoy, the Executive Director of the National Association of Medicaid Directors, and I'm incredibly happy to be here with my co-host, Mark Larson, who's the Senior Vice President of Leadership and Capacity Building at the Center for Healthcare Strategies. Hi, Mark. How are you?
Kate, I'm great. What a fun conversation we have today.
Fun and also illustrating some complexity. I think you probably share my view that one of the most challenging domains of Medicaid when I first became a Medicaid director was the systems and operational pieces. Technology at the point that you and I served was a little more nascent in its use in the Medicaid program. But I remember when I first started, I asked my then systems person for some kind of graphical overview of all that made Medicaid work from an engineering standpoint. And about a week later, I got an enormous, like 3 by 3 foot piece of paper that had an intense diagram that I barely understood. There's a lot to this. Did you feel like you were similarly needing to get educated when you started?
I totally was, Kate. As you know, I came from the legislature into being Medicaid director, and I had remembered conversations about financing technology products from that point of view. And I think many of us who come into being Medicaid directors aren't coming from a technology background, and the learning curve is significant. And what we know is that there's a lot of projects that don't work out so well, and having to figure out how to navigate that is a real challenge when that's not your technical background.
Exactly. States have a lot to contend with in this environment. You know, there's an unfolding policy agenda and a lot of important changes that are occurring in Medicaid. There's a lot of congressional scrutiny of the program and just a pretty vast array of vendors and other stakeholders who have interest in the program. These projects are big, complex, they're challenging to stage. States and territories are often working with external contractors on it. We really have an opportunity today to hear from folks who make this happen in two very significant states, talking about some of the aspects of how they think about launching this work, but also advice on kind of knitting together all the features from the policymaking to the actual implementation. And I think that that's really going to be terrific to hear directly from people who experience this on a day-to-day basis.
As always on our podcast, super lucky to be able to have a conversation with some from folks who are on the ground, but also just a really interesting. And so let's introduce our guest today, Sarah Gogoski from North Carolina and Emily Ritchie from Alaska. Sarah, can I ask you to introduce yourself and give our listeners a sense of what's your role in North Carolina?
Sure. Thanks for having me, Sarah Gogoski. I am our Chief Operating Officer with North Carolina Medicaid. And my team, among many things, is in charge of our technology strategy and implementation of our modernization roadmap that we've been working on in North Carolina for the last few years.
Well, Sarah, welcome. And Emily, welcome to the podcast. Can you introduce yourself and give our listeners a sense of your role in Alaska?
Hi, my name is Emily Ritchie, and I am the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Health in Alaska and also act as the state's Medicaid Director. So I oversee the different divisions and sections within the Department of Health that make up the state's Medicaid program.
Well, welcome to you both. Sarah, Emily, our curiosity starts with, why is technology important in a Medicaid program these days? Emily, do you mind if we start with you?
Sure. Technology is essential to how a Medicaid program operates, both supporting providers, but ultimately the individuals that are served through it. I rely on technology every day for kind of the basic aspects of my life, and the Medicaid program is similar to that. And we're moving into being able to engage through your phone or through your computer. That's what people expect now. That's how the world works. And so in order for Medicaid agencies to meet that need where the person is at, we have to rely on technology to do that. We are also administering incredibly complex programs, and that complexity is growing. And the way programs interact with other programs, even outside of Medicaid, is also changing and evolving. And all of that relies on technology in order to make it work. And when it doesn't work well, we see the consequences of that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Sarah, what would you add? How's technology important?
Yeah, I think everything Emily said is right. Thinking about how we're best supporting providers and beneficiaries and how technology is needed to move our program forward and continue to best serve the folks of North Carolina. I think the other thing is there's a continued focus now specifically on compliance and monitoring. And so how are we thinking about how our data is accessed, how we utilize our data from our systems and as a part of our technology build and infrastructure to make sure that we have easy access to our data, we can monitor how our systems are performing, and we can evaluate how changes are impacting the way we're serving the people of North Carolina.
Both of you gave so many great examples of how the technology has both proven and also aspirational potential to really enable the program from an efficiency and accountability standpoint, and also human services oriented design that can be tremendously beneficial to members. All that said, you know, these projects, as we've started to acknowledge, are often pretty tough for states. You have to come up with admittedly a small percentage of the cost, but that can be significant given the scale of them. You have to navigate procurement processes that can be pretty lengthy and procedurally complex. And I think another challenge that we've seen historically is it has been very difficult to scale solutions from state to state, as opposed to kind of spending first dollar each time something needs to be done, even if it's a common function across the country. So with all of that said, and also recognizing you all can't always afford to have technology experts on staff, what are some ways you're thinking about tackling some of those changes to make the process, you know, more efficient and more effective? And Sarah, may I go back to you to start us off?
Yeah, I think a couple of things that we've done in North Carolina recently that I think have helped is we've shifted to more of a business-led implementation timeline. So rather than our technology team defining what they think is best practice and that having us adapt when we have competing priorities, whether that be state or federal requirements that we're trying to implement, but how are we as the business defining what our priorities are and building a technology roadmap to support that? A second thing we've done is really invest in aligned governance across our technology partners and the business. So we have shared project management now, shared governance. And so we're all using the same tools, building more tools to support our work. So what do both teams need? And then how can we build tools that support both? So, you know, standardized procurement terms that are aligned across business and technology, spending a lot of time on data governance that our business team doesn't want to focus on, but our technology team needs so that they can build systems that support that. Thinking about not exciting things on the business side, but how that will inform our technology team so that they're aligned with our strategy and are then best positioned to help us understand what makes sense to procure and what can we build internally in North Carolina to meet our needs.
Sarah, I have to say, some folks might not describe that as exciting, but you know, coming from the policy vantage point and recognizing how much fuel can get burned and time spent recreating all those negotiated agreements in any given project, I just want to reflect back that I actually think of that as an incredibly significant advancement to have those governance practices in place and really to be doing that, anticipating how you all will figure in the conversation and the stages of the project ongoing. So, you know, many kudos on that. Emily, I'm sure that, you know, coming from your policy vantage point also sounds very appealing.
It does. And I was thinking about how we've changed a little bit in Alaska and in the department how we think about technology and how we think about systems. And it's just the nature of the way our organization is structured. It's very easy for teams to become siloed with their specific division and their specific purpose. And I think we have seen over a decade or so different systems grow up in these silos. The systems need to talk to each other. The systems may be old. They may not meet the needs that we have right now or our future needs. And so it's been really challenging over the past 3 years, I think, to try to break some of those silos down. How do we get people to start thinking together and asking those questions? So, Sarah, you were talking about business and technology teams, right? We're not quite structured that way, but I think about bringing together different divisions that have created their own technology systems and bringing them together to start to understand where they're at and then how they need to communicate and what their goals are, and then thinking about how the systems feed into a modern plan. So that's kind of work that we've been doing over the past few years. And it's exciting because we're seeing that start to happen. We're seeing our teams work together differently, bringing the policy and the operations and the technology together in those conversations. The other element that brings is the ability to align on a shared vision, not just within what used to be each one of our divisions, but across the Medicaid program as a whole. Because people are able to add a lot of different value from different perspectives, but they may not have been asked, or they may not have had the background to add that perspective before. So that's something that we're seeing. And then that shared vision and value allows us, I think, to move into better procurement strategies because we know what we're looking at. It also allows us to share best practices across divisions, where in the past, I don't know that we were doing that.
Emily, so you mentioned this in a couple of different ways, but when I hear this challenge of coordinating between the business folks, who I interpret that to mean the folks who are, you know, actually using systems to figure out is somebody eligible, to figure out getting a provider paid on time, all those things. What we always hear on the podcast is just how swamped people are. And my sense is that there's a real challenge in carving out enough time from folks who are trying to do the work to be engaged in this conversation about what's our vision for a new technology system. And people might just say, I don't know, just have the technology folks build us a system. Like, they'll just do it. And so I don't want to overlook how hard that process of breaking down those silos has been. And could we pause there and just ask you, do I hear that right? And how did you get there to the point that you get people working on a shared vision in a world that's just so busy?
You did get that right. We are still working on it. Every month I feel like something pops up and I'm like, oh man, we should have pulled these people together. Does this person know, right? So it's stepping back and thinking, like, is everyone that needs to be participating in these conversations, and who are we missing, right? My boss likes to say who's not at the table, and it's making sure you're doing that internally across your teams as well. I think we are in a position where we have had some really poor technology rollouts in the past consistently across different divisions and different elements. And it's not for lack of knowledge or effort or professionalism by our team. These are just really hard to do. And so those challenges are very much forefront in a lot of the minds of people that are trying to work through and make improvements. And it has created an environment where people are a lot more willing to be open, to come to these meetings, right? Asking someone to attend one more meeting, you know, once a month or whenever is challenging. But I think there's a real desire from people within our different divisions who are supporting and building out and administering this Medicaid program to connect differently. Because ultimately, our success is based on the ability of our contractors and our systems to perform these services effectively for our members and our providers, along with compliance and accountability. And if we're not successful in that, we feel it immediately. So I just think there's a willingness. And then a lot of it, too, comes back to identifying as a leader what your priorities are and what your expectations are for participation. And that flows down.
And I appreciate that. Sarah, does that resonate for you?
It does. A couple of tactical things we've done in North Carolina. It's a new challenge for our business staff to lead these big implementations. So asking a pharmacist to lead the implementation of a PBM is not to their typical wheelhouse. So we've been spending a lot of time building tools for them, helping them understand what the process is, what staff is expected to do on the IT side, on the project management side, on the operation side, so that they know they're supported by a team, but we're executing on their vision of what they expect the tool, the technology to deliver for pharmacies and pharmacists in North Carolina. So helping them understand what their team is and how we leverage contractors, and whether that's through requesting enhanced funding so that they have the folks that they need to execute on that vision, but making sure that they don't feel like they're leading it without a team that's not there to support them. We've been really thoughtful about not having people go to more meetings, and it hasn't happened totally, but you know, the same places where you're hearing updates on managed care or HR1 implementation, you're hearing updates on MES. So making sure that everybody's hearing it all at the same time so that the business gets more comfortable with talking about deployment and what interfaces mean and what it means to do a data conversion, so that they're thinking about those things when it's their turn to lead a module implementation. We did also stand up a new unit within North Carolina Medicaid. We have an advanced planning office now. So they lead all of our work around enhanced funding, drafting our APDs, pulling the business, finance, technology, operations all together. So that's really been helpful in at least kickstarting the work.
Sarah, it's so great to hear you talk about that advanced planning group. A lot of states don't necessarily have a dedicated team to handle that complicated, lengthy, pretty burdensome process with CMS. And for those who are listening who may not be aware, that refers to the process where state Medicaid programs are essentially applying for the 90% match for systems projects. Sarah, can you talk a little bit about how you approached creating that dedicated team? I know, like many states, North Carolina is facing some budget challenges. You're part of a larger superstructure, Health and Human Services Department. Can you just talk about how you approach that and how you got a resource? Because I think many, many states would find that of incredible value.
Yeah. So when we took our technology strategy back into our Medicaid agency, it used to live with our shared technology division within our Health and Human Services agency. We established our advanced planning office, which has only actually one full-time employee, state employee, and then the rest are contractors. But we do seek enhanced funding to pull down enhanced match for technical writers, folks that monitor the budgets, who help support APD writing and monitoring and reporting, certification. So all of that work lives within that advanced planning office, mostly supported by contractors, but now they have a very thorough process. We kick off our annual APD process each year. We do a kickoff deck. We talk about what everybody's needs are. We bring operations, strategy, finance, IT to the table so everybody can hear, okay, what's the business priority for next year for funding, whether that's new technology development or whether that's enhancements to our current system. And so everybody hears what we're asking for. And then we're on a staggered process by which we submit them to CMS so that we're not submitting them all on the last day and having our state officer yell at us so that he can't get through all of them in a timely basis, but also allows us to manage questions, make sure that we're adapting our submissions as guidance changes or as new information is requested.
Love hearing that. Emily, you too have many, many core bread and butter systems projects. I think that APD burden is similarly great in Alaska. And you also have a layering feature. You are the lead for Alaska's implementation of the rural health transformation projects. Can you talk a little bit about how you're approaching that just from the standpoint of coordinating all that really extensive portfolio? And then how it is to work with, you know, other folks in different state sectors like public health who may be newer to the Medicaid processes for systems?
Yeah, those are great questions. We also began to kind of centralize our APD, like we created an office that manages our APDs on the Medicaid side. So I feel like we are much more organized there than we were in the past. Sarah, I loved hearing some of your ideas. I was like, I want to copy that. I want to have an annual meeting where we walk through everything. So I think that's been important. In terms of the Rural Health Transformation Program, that has just been a phenomenal project and lift over the last few months, and how that builds into Medicaid now and then in the future has been something that we're still trying to piece together. I think Alaska's taken a slightly different approach than other states, and that impacts how we look at technology and the systems. We are directing most of our funds to different organizations within the state, and we are really soliciting ideas for them because the needs of our state are so broad. Something in the Aleutians may be very different from something in interior Alaska. And so we're really letting in asking for entities to come and give us their ideas. At the same time, we've been trying to layer in what exists now that could help in Alaska that didn't exist 5 years ago or 10 years ago or wasn't feasible, right? So in January, we kicked off a meeting. I heard New Jersey did something similar maybe a month or so before, where we actually invited over 300 Alaskans or representing different organizations together. And we invited some technology companies in, and we really focused on thinking about some of the new tools that are available and new systems and how it connects together. Not with an expectation that the entities participating necessarily decided to adopt those technologies, although I think for some of them it probably makes sense, but to give a sense to Alaskan organizations of what is out there and why things that we may have looked at 10 years ago or 15 years ago are new and are viable, and how do we link that into a sustainable funding source. So that's been our approach, right? Is we're really trying to bring ideas about technology to different Alaskan organizations, see what resonates for them and what sticks, and then we'll use rural health funding to support those in alignment with our application and our objectives. After this first year, we're like right in the middle of evaluating some of the different project awards right now. But once we see what comes out of that, I think that will give the state a sense of where people are naturally at in terms of technology adoption, how that fits into our systems, and where we may need to come in and highlight or lift up specific projects or opportunities that we see. It's exciting and it's very challenging to try to knit all of that together on a short time frame.
If we take a step back, we started with a recognition that there's almost nothing in Medicaid, whether it's supporting members, paying providers, working with our partners, that doesn't involve some technology. And then you've both talked about the challenge of building the capacity internally to drive that. And coming from a small state myself, I do appreciate that. I'm not sure everybody understands how different it is, big states, small states, rural states, less rural states, to have to put together all of this in a way that oftentimes is with a really small team. In my state, it wasn't easy to get technology folks to want to move up to Vermont. I assume that you experienced some of those challenges too.
We absolutely experience those. And so it becomes a balance of how much do we rely on contractors or consultants to help us, and how do we figure out what are the areas that we can do where we have to be that bridge, and where do we bring in that external support? I'm sure Vermont's the same way, especially in Alaska too. We want to make sure that as we're making these investments, federal investments will be followed by state support to sustain this. How do we make sure that as entities are exploring new technologies, which we want, or building out data and systems, which we need in order to be more effective with our care and our coordination and our data sharing, how do we make sure that we're leveraging scale? How do we make sure that we are ensuring that these providers who are entering into contracts with new technologies or new systems, how do we make sure that they have really clear guidelines in their contract? We don't want to be in a position where we are funding a number of different projects and contracts for those projects don't contain basic protections or basic functionalities that we need. And so when I think about the Rural Health Transformation Program and how that ties into Medicaid, one is how do you build these technologies into a sustainable system, right, that aligns with our Medicaid goals, but also how do you make sure we are supporting these entities in, to be frank, not getting taken advantage of by larger organizations, and our dollars are being used most effectively.
Yeah, I appreciate that. These are often some of the biggest technology projects states will do. And rarely is Medicaid doing it all by themselves. Emily, you talked about working with vendors, contractors, but my sense is that we're also talking about working with state procurement offices, maybe centralized IT staff, our sister agencies. Sarah, I'm wondering, particularly when we see so many new to being Medicaid directors or new to being Medicaid leaders, what advice would you give to them about how to work with all of these different partners and or how people should work with Medicaid?
We all have lots of technology vendors that we work with that may or may not be performing to the best of their ability at all times. And so establishing those relationships with those vendors at all levels, like your teams are managing them, but how are you engaged? How are you ensuring that they're meeting your expectations from a leadership perspective? And it really comes down to how folks are being served. Where we see the biggest pressure on our vendors is when we don't see the vision being executed on when it comes to serving those that are enrolled in North Carolina Medicaid or those providers that are providing services for our beneficiaries. And so how do we continue to keep that at the forefront as we think about technology delivery, I think is important and a good place sort of to lean in from a leadership perspective. I'm never, though I sit at top of our technology strategy and our implementation, I am not a technologist by background. And so trying to like ground my discussions and what it means for the folks that we're serving, I think has been really helpful in creating those conversations with our vendors. Also, just standardize expectations. If you have one vendor that's expected to do things one way and another that's expected to do things a different way, just makes it harder for your teams to manage and makes it harder for you as a leader to manage. And so how are we making sure expectations are clear for everyone? And then using our purchasing power as the Medicaid program to help support the state. We recently released an RFI around our data warehouse and our long-term strategy around data analytics. It's something that Medicaid needs, but it's something that all of our sister divisions are going to need. And how are we being thoughtful around that? And then using Medicaid's purchasing power to help drive those conversations and best support all North Carolinians is important.
Emily, what would you add about how to keep all of these partners in the process working coherently together?
You know, I think from a state perspective, one of the things that I've seen over and over again is we are asking our employees in the Medicaid program and different divisions to be contract managers, and that's critical to their success. But we don't think about ourselves that way. We don't train them. We don't always give them the framework or the tools to be successful in that. Sarah, I loved when you mentioned earlier talking about tools. I think that's something that we don't do very well in state government. Often I hear people say that's the procurement office to manage contracts, and it's not. Because those contracts are effectively how we extend ourselves to perform work that we need to do to administer the program. So I think some of it is making sure we have a culture where you can identify kind of who's responsible for a procurement. I think starting with that shared vision is important so that we have really clear expectations. And you need that from the beginning with the RFI, with the RFP, and you need to articulate that very clearly to potential bidders. You know, what it is that you are expecting and the culture that you're establishing as an agency that they're expected to work in. And then I think the other thing that I've seen that's really important in getting everybody off on the right foot, because once you get off on the wrong foot, it's really hard to walk that back. You spend so much energy circling that, is thinking about where you have leverage in the procurement process and in the contract negotiation process, and then ensuring that you're building that leverage into the contract. Because again, that's how you ensure that that alignment exists between what the Medicaid agency is trying to achieve and what your contractors are doing. When that misalignment happens, it can result in a lot of distrust with stakeholders, with providers, with members. And that distrust really impacts, I think, a Medicaid agency's ability or our agency's ability to move forward with projects that may otherwise be supported by everyone. If you don't have consistent operational success and you're struggling to pay bills or to enroll timely, it's really hard to talk about doing an 1115 waiver or the other benefits you could bring in. So if we think about building out the system, we think about how Medicaid can tie into broader goals for healthcare in your state or population health, I think people underestimate the impact that operational challenges can have. And those, in my mind, tie directly to technology when you're talking about Medicaid.
I'm so grateful for the clarity and the practicality that both of you are bringing to what can feel like a very opaque topic. Bringing this to earth is hugely helpful. I heard so much that is really useful to take away, starting with relationships and the origin point of trust and common purpose and mission in originating any of these large-scale projects. Also, both of you talk so cogently around, centralized project management, the, contracting support, APDs. Mark, what else stood out for you?
Kate, I was thinking about that phrase, death by a thousand little cuts. And what I was left thinking about was how success is really built by a lot of different small pieces. Conversations about what success looks like that form our vision, that how we translate that into all the many conversations that have to keep a lot of different people aligned. I'm appreciating that for anybody who was hoping that Sarah and Emily would give us the, all you have to do is, do these two things really well, that unfortunately not that simple. But I'm also struck by none of it essentially being some big, remarkable, hard thing that if you get wrong, you're utterly doomed, right? That it takes a lot of those little practices to equal a big success. And nobody's gonna jump in up and down when members get served well, right? I mean, you're not gonna be on the front page of the newspaper for, boy, Sarah and Emily did those procurements and implementations so really well. But we all know what happens when they don't. And so appreciating the, lifting up of the important and yet often overlooked work of public servants doing what it takes to end up implementing things that are really important.
Yeah, and things that directly serve the mission of, serving eligible people in this crucially important program. Emily, Sarah, we are so indebted for the conversation today. You're leaving folks with some great stuff to, pull for their own use. We appreciate both of you. And Mark, thank you so much for another great opportunity. For all those listening, thanks for joining us. And please keep tracking to future episodes of Medicaid Leadership Exchange. We'll see you next time.
This podcast is a collaboration between the Center for Healthcare Strategies and the National Association of Medicaid Directors. It is made possible by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.